The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
Ever thought of diversifying your farm? Maybe opening a shop or turning some of it into a visitor destination?
It's been turned into a wonderful play area for children of all ages. And then 8 years ago, we opened up our maize.
And then that forced us into thinking differently. We weren't doing the fresh meat sales before that, really, on a large scale. So then we had to think, right, what do we need to do now to keep us full-time on the farm?
We'll pick the brains of some who've done it successfully on a Farming Programme Diversification Special. And, of course, we'll look at the markets and the week's farming news.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Hello. Soon as Sean Sparling goes on holiday, the sun starts blazing, shining on the righteous as ever. This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, the 4th of August, 2024. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, the government has pledged to introduce a new deal for farmers after the latest DEFRA survey revealed extremely low confidence levels, with many planning to reduce the size of their business or leave the industry altogether. DEFRA Secretary Steve Reid acknowledged that confidence amongst farmers was low and said that the new government will restore stability and confidence in the sector, introducing a new deal for farmers to boost rural economic growth and strengthen food security alongside nature's recovery. We will, he continued, protect farmers from being undercut in trade deals, make the supply chain work more fairly, prevent shock rises in bills by switching on GB energy, and better protect them from flooding through a new flood resilience task force. Let's hope it's more than political promises. NFU Sugar and British Sugar have agreed a deal for the 2025-26 contract. Once again, there will be numerous options, including a one-year fixed-price contract at £33 a tonne, a future-linked contract, enhanced yield protection option, cash advance, late delivery allowance and frost insurance are all also being offered in line with previous years. Muller has increased its milk price to over 40 pence a litre. First Milk has also announced a 1p increase from September. And the latest rural crime numbers paint a worrying picture. We'll have more on that on next week's Farming Programme. So, to diversification. Many are seriously thinking about it for various reasons, not least of which the need to secure the farm's future and generate additional income. Recent research by advisers Investec found that every farmer they spoke to was looking at alternatives. 8 in 10 said this was due to the current market dynamics, and over half said their income has increased following diversification. We spoke to three local farmers who've shown their entrepreneurial spirit and taken the plunge into something new. We'll hear from sheep farmer Chris Elkington, who set up Gelston Lamb, Anne Harrison, who installed a milk vending machine and sells to other farm shops. But first, let's head to Uncle Henry's farm and meet Merrill Ward. Arable and pig farmer for many years, then a farm shop, ultimately a well-known, award-winning destination in itself. Merrill, first, give us a bit of history before Uncle Henry came along.
It was an arable farm, and we're also livestock farmers, so I'm probably better known as a pig farmer rather than the diversification of Uncle Henry's.
And how long were you doing that for?
Oh gosh, well I'm fourth generation, and I actually did a degree in agricultural science back in the day, and this year is the 40th year I've actually been back in Lincolnshire farming. So without giving too much away about my age, that's
we're not going to sit and calculate
it. No, don't do that.
No, absolutely not. So going back all those years, what prompted you to diversify? Did you sit and kind of have a conversation about the business and think we need to do something? What prompted the discussion?
Well, there are a couple of things. We had some absolutely beautiful stone buildings here at Grayingham Grange, which is the base for Uncle Henry's, and we needed to find a good purpose for them because they were obsolete as farm buildings. And we'd also always had our own home-produced produce at home, particularly pork and potatoes, and thought that they were really good products. And so we'd always had a desire to actually go into some form of retailing. So we combined the two, and the vision in 2006 was to have a farm shop with a small coffee, I think we called it a coffee stop. So we'd sell a few, as you do in Lincolnshire, everybody likes cake. So we're going to sell a few cakes and have a few cups of tea. And it rapidly became apparent that there was a real interest in people coming out to the farm for all sorts of reasons. People wanted to buy local food, and we've got lots of local producers that we stock in the shop. But people wanted to come out for more than, yeah, it was a drive out to us. So they wanted to come for more than just a sort of half an hour, and wanted to come for a meal as well. So the first sort of expansion was the cafe, which went from 45 seats to 90. And that's expanded more since then. And then we started looking at the outside area sort of around Uncle Henry's, because people were wanting to come and walk their dogs and to get out in the countryside. And, you know, there's nothing better than a day like today to just have a beautiful place to be. And so the next big expansion was to take the area that's behind the garden wall, which is the old walled garden for the Uncle Henry's farmhouse. In its day, it would have fed 40 or 50 farm staff, and now it's been grassed down, but it's been turned into a wonderful play area for children of all ages. We've got a garden safari, jumping pillows, and then 8 years ago we opened up our maze, and that's been fabulously successful, and people love coming, to the point that we now have three mazes. We've got the main one, which would take you 45 minutes to get around. But we've also got two smaller ones for younger children, a musical maze, and also one with finger paints in it. So there's just so much to do.
Many farms are diversifying kind of out of necessity. Maybe their market is not as good as it used to be. Maybe they are needing additional income and so on. Was that the case with you, or was it more a desire thinking, we've got all this, we might as well do something with it?
I think back in the day it was that we had the space and we had an interest. Actually, my husband, before he moved to Lincolnshire, used to run a farm park in Suffolk. So we were used to welcoming the general public onto the farm. We've always been keen on having school visits, and we now run 25 school visits a year. We've got a space that we can welcome other groups in the evening, so brownies, cubs, guides, scouts, all sorts of team events for different companies we can run in this sort of space we've got behind the garden wall. And it's just grown from there.
So it wasn't a case of, we need some additional income, we need to do something because there are issues with whatever we're farming?
No, I think we wanted...
It was more your choice, shall we say?
Yeah, it was our choice, but we did want to get closer to our customer. And I think it's very easy in farming to, you're producing a product, and then there's, in our case with pigs, it was quite a small or short supply chain. We supply a major processor that goes into some of the big retailers, but we still felt we were too distant. We thought we got a product that we can really showcase. So we're quite unique in that really all those variety of products that you can produce from a pig, whether it's bacon, curing gammons, cooking off hams, making hastelets, sausages, black puddings, pork pies. There is a whole raft of products that we're producing on a daily basis, and we are so proud of that. I'm very proud as well that they're now stocked in the Lincolnshire local cooperatives, so that actually in the 70 stores around Lincolnshire, people around Lincolnshire can have access to products from the Lincolnshire Pork Company.
Got a few farms go into farm shops because they're by the side of the road, they've got a little bit of space there, they could put a big shed up and sell stuff. You're not exactly next to the road here, are you?
No, you could have called this completely mad, actually. So we're about a mile off the main road, and we do have a lot of people who plan us into their journeys now. So if they're going from Norfolk to Yorkshire, they've found out about us and we're their stop in the middle. We have a lot of people coming off the ferry calling in for breakfast as they're heading down the A15. And we have a lot of people calling in for takeaway products, whether that's Scotch eggs or pork pies or sausage rolls or whatever. So The name and the reputation's got out there over the years, but certainly we haven't got the sort of chimney pots that some farm shops have. So we have to work very hard to give a really good customer experience, because we rely very much on our lovely customers coming back time and time again.
Absolutely. Let's just go on to the sort of the process of diversifying. You knew what you wanted to do, to at least to start with, in terms of the farm shop. How did you actually start the ball rolling? Did you seek advice from somebody? Was it a family thing? How did the thing get underway?
It was a whole mixture, really. We were very lucky. We went to J.H. Walter, who are well-known agents in the day, and a gentleman called David Wright, who'd been involved in a lot of diversified projects, helped us with a lot of the early advice to get the building and the build right. And going back to 2006, there were rural development grants, so we're very lucky again to be able to actually access a grant to help with the build. And we've been able to preserve a building, which if we had to do that work now, would I don't know how we'd think about starting that. So we were very fortunate in that regard, and then we just built up our knowledge as we went along. It's been a learning process. We bought a little sausage machine and started making sausages, and the first ones were a disaster. I remember making some sausages with leek and putting them in the fridge, and they sort of blew up overnight. So we've had some problems, but nothing's insurmountable, and you know, it takes time to build a business that's now a couple of million pounds turnover.
Yeah, it's you learn by experience. Absolutely. I suppose in a lot of these cases, don't you? So you must have made pretty detailed plans right at the outset.
We did. The most difficult one, I mean, you can write a budget, but of course it all depends on how many people come down the drive. And we got some help from Lincoln Uni, who had a master's programme. And so we had four people on this master's programme come and use us as their dissertation to help us write a marketing plan. And I mean, I think they basically came to the conclusion that we were mad, because there were no chimney pots and the A15 wasn't that busy back in the day, 18 years ago. But they were a great help, because they helped us target our marketing. And of course, it's word of mouth. You know, if you're in a rural location like we are, it's word of mouth, and you need to do a good job, really value your customer, reward your loyal customers, and give them a great experience. And you need to keep doing new things as well. People like to see the place growing and developing, and we are very, very lucky. We have a local audience. And I hope they regard this as, you know, part of the furniture in the locality. They are, you know, we have some very loyal customers.
I think everybody, virtually everybody in Lincolnshire knows Uncle Henry's and knows of it, and has probably been or at least seen the signs as they drive along the road. But when you're new, it's not quite the same. Clearly, you've got to launch your business. Did you do that by advertising? How did you market it in the early days?
We never really had an advertising budget. So there's all sorts of things you can do, and it's about getting out there. So we went to farmers market so that we could showcase the products. We've been to all sorts of food fairs, again, so that we could showcase the product and get our name out there. We've held all sorts of events here over the years. We've had 14 years of Open Farm Sundays. It's just finding as many ways as you can to contact as many groups. We very much try and do things to excite the media. And I mean, a good example being COVID, our maze design at the time was a thank you to the NHS. And we were very lucky to actually end up on the main BBC news with that. And of course, that then comes with its own challenges, because then you've got to start managing the numbers that come down the drive. We're also very lucky we entered a sausage competition and ended up on the BBC One show, and actually won the Lincolnshire sausage, won the best sausage on the evening, and that was fantastic publicity. And it all helps, but at the end of the day, you've got to have a good product. You can put out as much PR as you like. If your product isn't any good, then people won't come back, and it's the repeat business that really matters.
It's become, over the years, a very successful business, as you say, £2 million business now. Is there anything, though, that you would do differently now that you've had those years of experience?
I think it's quite a hard business, Steve, because we're open 7 days a week. We started off at 6 days a week and then thought, this is madness. We've got all these overheads, so why? And we've got people turning up on a Monday. Why aren't we letting them in? And so it's a hard... The only days we actually close are Christmas Day and Boxing Day, and then we have a couple of days shut down for repairs and maintenance in January. But you've got to enjoy what you do. You've got to have a passion for it. You've got to want to do it. And you've got to continually be innovating. And that's the fun of it, really, because at the end of the day, it's got to be a fun place to come. And we've got all sorts of ideas for the summer this year of things that are going to be going on. And so there is going to be a bit of a theme coming out with Sid the Squirrel doing different things over the next few weeks, which is all good ideas generated by the staff as well, because you've got to involve your staff base in it, because you can't come up with the good ideas just by yourself.
Any tips for somebody who's sat there thinking, sounds like a good idea, not necessarily to do what you did, but to diversify generally? Any tips, advice that you would give to somebody if they're thinking of diversifying into whatever direction?
I think the main one is that you've got to make sure that your main business is sound. So there's nothing wrong with diversification, but it does take time and it does take effort. And if that's taking you away from your core business, you've got to make sure that there's somebody there still looking after the core business and you're not spreading yourself too thinly. And you've got to make sure that you take time away from it, because it can become all... There's always something else you can be doing. That's the problem. It's a lovely challenge, but it's a problem as well. And you've got to involve the team, you've got to involve the rest of the farm, and everybody's got to be enthusiastic about it.
Important to get professional advice?
Absolutely. We're very lucky with farm shops. We have there is an organisation called the Farm Retail Association who gave us some really good advice in the early days. It was opportunities to go and have a look behind the scenes in other farm shop businesses. So whenever, since we opened the Maze, we're part of the Maze Association, and we go off and look round other people's mazes as part of a group and discuss how they're managed. And out of that came the Maze competition, and we were national Maze of the year last year, which was fantastic.
You've done a brilliant job, and it is, I mean, we've got a lovely day today, admittedly, but even so, it's a lovely place to sit. It's very relaxing, it's clearly busy, and it's clearly doing well. So, Meryl, thank you for having a chat with me today. Lots of useful knowledge, lots of useful advice there, and long may Uncle Henry's continue.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's really good of you to come out and have a good look round. And now we're going to send you around the maze.
Ah, I may be some time. Thanks, Meryl.
Bye.
Like many ventures, successful, but not without the odd growing pain along the way, and now a hugely popular Lincolnshire family day out. Anne Harrison farms arable and livestock with her niece Rachel Smith near Grantham and has installed a milk vending machine. She spoke to the farming programme's Charlotte Lineker.
We're hearing that sort of tough market conditions are pushing farmers to consider alternative revenue streams. Is that something that you can relate to?
Yes, I can. The milk price, where we sell it to a processor, is extremely volatile. And there were one or two farmers, we set it up in 2018, and it's been really good, you know, the feedback and how it has. We can set our price, which is what most businesses do, in the vending machine, rather than being just told what we're going to get. And also with the vending machine diversification, it gives an opportunity to educate and talk to customers and explain some of the misnomers about milk, you know, that it is actually 97% fat-free. I think it's becoming increasingly obvious that people are feeding into local milk, sustainable. We have a glass bottle, no plastic, and it's definitely a success for us, and we've built it in where we're supplying local farm shops and local village shops, and there's quite an uptake, so we've been very good, but farmers have got to diversify, because the money just isn't there from the market price, you know, so we're always looking at added income streams. You know, really important.
do you think you would have looked at this alternative method if it had not been for the difficulties sort of facing the traditional dairy farming industry?
It makes more work, and it would have been easy to stay as we were if it wasn't for the volatile prices. But I saw how things were coming out of Europe and realised we'd got to look at different income streams to make it the business financially viable. And it is still a real concern.
That's Anne Harrison from Grantham. Coming up, we'll take our weekly look at the livestock and grain markets, and we've one more diversification story from Kelston Lamb.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate, Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. Whether it's to produce additional income streams, spread the risk, protect the farm and the family's future, many farms are diversifying in many different ways. The possibilities are endless, but will of course depend on the land available, the location, time, money and expertise available. We'll hear from a business advice company next week, because many farmers we spoke to felt that an external pair of eyes, looking with head not heart, was essential in making sure the project was viable, stayed on track and was ultimately successful. One more story for this week from a Lincolnshire farmer who's done it. Chris Elkington went from a few sheep to lots of sheep to a farm shop to selling to local businesses and online and cooking at all the local country shows.
What prompted you to talk about diversifying and not just rear sheep?
Basically, it was how do we make a small farm support a family? You know, and that's what we were always wanting to do. We didn't want to work for anybody else or things like that. So we decided that we'd have to diversify.
And how soon after you started the farm did you diversify?
We hovered around 100 sheep mark for a long, long time. And we soon quickly realised that, you know, a small amount of sheep you're not going to make enough money to live on. Then that's when we sort of kept diversifying into different things with the sheep, selling them as box lambs to start with. And then we started the catering side. A friend was doing it with beef, and he said, "Oh, you ought to do a bit of this." And we got going with the show side and the cooking burger side of things, and it's sort of grown into what it is now, where we're selling, you know, every sort of individual cut of lamb each week to pubs, restaurants, you know, private customers.
So you're selling to the trade, you're actually taking your trailer out to shows and so on, and you've got a farm shop actually here on the farm.
Yeah, so we do a pop-up shop. I guess it's the in thing, isn't it? So we basically get ready for that once a month.
And you're selling online?
We sell online every week, so people can order online every week. So we're always in the butchery, sort of a Monday, Tuesday, delivery day on a Wednesday. That's every week. And the pop-up shop's once a month. We do a farmer's market once a month at Grantham. And then we do all the shows as well, cooking events. And
it was quite a big decision to change from what you'd initially set out to do. Did you get any advice on this?
Not really, no. We had a good friend who was sort of already doing it with the beef, and he sort of been a big help with it. And then he packed up doing it, but we sort of carried on, and he was quite influential in a lot of it. And then we sort of learnt along the way a lot of it, you know, and you soon found out what things didn't work and what events weren't good and which ones were. And
so did you kind of sit there with a business plan, started budgets and things like this, or
I'd be lying if I said, yeah, we did the business plan and everything. I'm not good like that. It was just a case of let's have a go and see where we go with this. In amongst all this, we had obviously COVID, which sort of really put a stop to all the catering events. And then that forced us into thinking differently. We weren't doing the fresh meat sales before that, really, on a large scale. So then we had to think, right, what do we need to do now to keep us full-time on the farm? And that's when we went to put the butchery on the farm and start doing.
So you kind of were making business decisions, but without sort of sitting there with a big piece of paper and a spreadsheet and so on?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I think you do, don't you?
Okay. When you launched everything, how did you do it? Did you do a big marketing campaign? Was it word of mouth? How did you actually get things up and running?
Yeah, to start with the freezer lambs, it was all word of mouth and friends and family. And then sort of internet came along. Well, it's always been here, hasn't it? But it was became more prevalent, and we got so with Facebook pages and all your Instagram and everything else. And then it sort of got bigger and bigger with that side of things, and a lot of our business comes through that now.
So no big sort of marketing spends, advertising and so on?
We tried a few adverts here and there, but the internet's where everyone goes now, isn't it, for anything.
And without giving your sort of financial secrets or anything like that away, how's it gone? Is it viable for you?
It is viable, yeah. We're in a good position, really. It's immensely hard work. We find it quite difficult with a young family. There's not a huge amount of time to have any time off. You know, it does have its downsides.
So is it very much the two of you? You've got staff as well?
Yeah, we now employ sort of three people and then some self-employed people for the shows and things like that. So, yeah, no, it's sort of gone from being a sort of pipe dream into sort of a reality employing people.
Is there anything looking back over those few years that you do differently?
It's a good question. I don't really think there's anything we would do dramatically differently. No, I don't think so. I think it was just all about learning, and you do learn along the way. But no, I don't. As a rule, I don't think we'd have done anything huge amountly different.
So you don't regret not sitting there with a spreadsheet and 50-page business plan and so on?
No, I can't say as it's made us any worse off anyway.
Having gone through the experience and having done a few years now since you diversified, if somebody's thinking about it, any tips, any advice you give them?
I would just try and do your sums. It's very easy to get caught up with trying to compete with supermarkets and things, you know, businesses like that you think, oh, crack it, they're doing it very cheaply, and you're thinking, well, I can't charge that, you know. You've got to be really careful, because at the end of the day you have got to make money, and you can quite easily not make money. So I would just make sure you do your figures right and don't undersell your product. You know, you have to make money.
You've got to have value in your product. There's no good going for the cheapest, as you say, because you're not big enough, are you?
No, you're never going to compete with supermarkets, you know, and I don't think people really expect you to. You know, they're coming because they want to buy direct from the farm, and they are willing to pay a bit more as long as the quality's there, which we like to think we are.
Chris, it's good to see that things are going well and that the business has developed, and long may it continue to do so. Thanks ever so much for your time on the Farming Programme today.
Thank you, Steve.
More on diversification in part two next week, when we'll hear from business advisors Investec. Now, have you diversified? Maybe it didn't go to plan. Would you share your story with us? What went wrong? What would you do differently? Would you try again? Do get in touch. Email farming@hitsradio.co.uk or WhatsApp, starting your message with the word farming, to 01522 888 888, and I'll get in contact with you.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting as usual with livestock, and from Mason's Rural at Louth Market, auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime steers all in average 283.64 pence per kilo, and prime heifers all in average 281.3. Top price in the steers in the pence per kilo were J&S Brooks of Strubby at 309.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head were F. Wallace and Son of Biscathorpe at £1,851.35. In the heifers, both the pence per kilo and the pounds per head went to J.C. Scully of Bournemouth at 299.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head at £1,731.30. A reminder, this coming Monday is Store Cattle Day, a super entry of over 60-year store cattle forward. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had an exceptional trade for all weights and grades, with an SQQ of 325.17 pence per kilo, and an all-in average of £136.63. Top price this week at 378 pence per kilo went to Tom Bingham of Oxton. Top price per head went to Shaw Brothers of Binbrook, which topped at £174 for a 60 kilo lamb, with others from the same home at £159 and £152. That concludes the prime lambs. Just a few cool news about this week. numbers in very short supply, but trade pretty much on fire. An average this week of £112.54. The top price this week went to P.A. Smith of Louth at £178. Shaw Brothers of Binbrook sold Suffolks to £145 and £144. Mules this week topped at £102 for S. Cosgrove & Sons of Haynton. That concludes this week's market report. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. And with a look at the grain markets, open fields, Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. A new month and a new, slightly lower interest rate too for us. Let's hope for a change in sentiment in some of the other grain markets that we follow, as the month of July has not been very kind to us. To be fair, the markets were on the plus side until the US markets opened, but these guys really do have their feet on the market's neck currently. US corn futures fell below $4 spot on Wednesday, but with a benign weather outlook and the next USDA report is still 10 days away, they don't seem in any rush to change their mood. Interestingly, the USDA are planning to use the latest survey data from their Farm Service Agency a month earlier this year in order to try and predict more closely the acres that they're reporting on. Normally, you'd get this in the September report, but we hope to see some slightly more accurate information in August report this year. Let's hope they lose some acres. Some more information from Russia and Eastern Europe. Domestic values in Russia have increased for the first time since May. This would be supported by some of their export numbers, 3.2 million tonnes of wheat compared to 2.6 million tonnes the previous month. So if we do see some demand, this should surely help. There are now rumours circulating that Turkey could restart their export programme before their self-imposed ban on the 15th of October. You would guess that the Russians would be the main supplier here, but regardless, it's demand and we should not be too fussy where it comes from. Other than this, no fresh news to change the direction of travel. I've read nothing more from the EU that would change the view that yield and quality is poor. For the UK, we are now just getting going into some wheat. I stress that it is very early days, but it looks okay so far. Bushel weights, 74 kilograms-ish on the feed wheats and 76 kilograms-ish, maybe a little more on the early milling wheats. I have to admit this is much better than my pessimistic thoughts a couple of weeks ago. Proteins certainly on the lower side, which would mirror the early barleys. But again, if we can get milling wheats with something starting with a 12, then it won't be a disaster. I can already see a potential issue with low grade 1 and 2 wheat. There could be a lot of 11.5 plus stuff, but we're just going to have to play this by ear a little and wait for some more to be cut. If we can get some quality to the early cut wheats and we can maintain some of the premiums that sit with us, then things won't be a disaster. If we can combine with a small global rally, which would climb us back to something starting with a 2, then it's probably sensible to cover a bit. So, grain prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, August, 175 to 185, September, 180 to 190, January, 185 to 195, and May, 195 to 205. Feed barley, August, 145 to 155, September, 155 to 165, January, 160 to 165. And all seed rape, August, 375 to 385, November, 385 to 395, and January, 390 to 400. As usual, please do call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Some heavy rains forecast for Monday night as the pressure drops. Otherwise, it looks to be a nice summer week with highs in the mid-20s Celsius, just light winds from the southwest and plenty of sunshine. So more on diversification next week. The latest rural crime numbers don't make good reading. We'll talk about that. And a new environmental farming group's been formed in Lincolnshire. So we'll hear from them on the Farming Programme podcast, available on all platforms from 7am Sunday the 11th of August. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, enjoy the sunshine, keep the combines turning, and have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.